Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 144. I'm recording it on Sunday, June 21st, 2009. The PE 10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased to today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is DD Groove. The title of the podcast is I Can Teach You How to Lose Money in a Bull Market. I can do that little thing. That's a little bit of a joke, but the point is quite true. There's a website that is titled something like, or it's a blog, I guess it's a blog. I can teach you how to be rich. I can teach you how to be rich. And I've heard good things about the blog, but I haven't really paid attention to it. I can't say, but I study. I make a life study out of investor reaction to hearing the realities of stock investing. And one of the people in charge of that blog, they have a discussion board associated with the blog, and I was having a discussion with this fellow at a different blog, and he said, oh, let's take the discussion over to the discussion board that we have. And I said, fine, that sounds good. And I was saying passive investing is a disaster, and he was saying, well, you know, maybe passive investing isn't perfect, but it's better than not investing at all in stocks. And I said, no, I don't think so. It's better not to invest in stocks than to invest passively. Passive investing is bad. And he said, ah, you can't believe that. Come over in the discussion board. And I went over to the discussion board, and I put up my argument, and he asked a couple questions, and then there was no response. It just it tricked me up. My preferred thing would be if my preferred of all would be if he said, hey, you're right, you know, I'm going to start publicizing this valuation informed indexing idea. That would be my preferred. Or if he gave me some good points and we sort of just were friends and traded thoughts, that would be nice. But there was no argument at all. Now, you're never sure how to interpret these things, but I interpret it as a good sign. I interpret it as some of the people, and that nobody else from, you know, it wasn't a real big discussion board community. So if it had been bigger, I'm sure there would have been people, because it's very provocative statements that I was making. I didn't hold anything back. But given that there were a low number of people, I think no one really wanted to take the issue on. They saw these arguments and they said, you know, maybe they don't agree, but the arguments aren't totally crazy, and they just don't want to take them on. And I've never seen that reaction before, I have to say, in 7 years. I've had people say, your stuff is fantastic, Rob. You're the first person who has ever made sense out of stock investing for me. And I've had people say, Rob, I'm going to kill your wife and children. You are upsetting me. I have all my money, all my retirement money, riding on passive investing. And what you're saying is making my stomach hurt. And I've had people, you know, there have been some variations, but never have I had anyone just sort of let it be. So I, you know, if it's becoming less controversial, that's a good thing. And I've had several experiences of this nature lately. I had a guy, he runs the blog, I think it's called Free Money Finance, and it's a big blog, and he sent me an email, I think this was Friday, a couple days ago, and he says, Rob, and I've been posting at his blog. I don't post there every day, but I don't know, a couple times a week. And I think, I don't know what in particular set him off, but he sent me an email. It was so strange. You know, I've gotten these emails. I've been banned, you know, banned in Boston. I've been banned everywhere. And at all places where lots of passive investors congregate. And But this guy didn't ban me at first. He did eventually ban me. But the first thing he did was he sent me an email. And he says, Rob, I'd be grateful if you would stop posting at my blog. And I don't think anyone has ever invited somebody not to post at their blog. It's so strange. Most blog owners, they love to get comments. And he certainly didn't say that the comments were not top-notch or anything like that. And I said, well, you know, why is that? And I think that day there had been a guy who had talked about the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and I put up, you know, the evidence that they're analytically invalid and linked to the new school. And he says, you know, you're coming to dominate the discussions of retirement. And what does that mean, dominate? I think what it means is I report what the historical data says accurately, and it makes people who are reporting it inaccurately look bad. And, of course, that's what I want to do. Not that I don't like them, but just that I don't want people to think that the wrong numbers are, you know, people should be using the wrong numbers. And he has no argument. So it's sort of like the same thing as at the discussion board. He doesn't feel he has any arguments. In the old days, the passive investors felt, there must be some argument here. We've got to be right. You know, we've got to be right. There must be some argument. We just can't think of it. But now it's almost as though some of the passive investing dogmatists are saying, we really don't have arguments, but we don't want to change, so would you just not talk, please? You know, and the guy pointed out, and I said, well, look, you know, you're denying your readers. If I were to not post it, I'm denying your readers this stuff. And he says, well, Rob, he says, look, I've been nice. I'm asking you nice. And I ran a guest blog entry from you. And I said, yeah, that's true. You know, I agree. You've been nice. But why are you doing this? This isn't nice to your readers. And he indicated he wasn't going to ban me, but then he did anyway. At least, you know, I tried to post the other day and I wasn't able to. So I think he did ban me. But then there was an incident at the Money Blog Network. Money Blog Network forum. And there, it was bonkers. Some guy had he was asking about setting up a blog carnival, and I said, what we need is a blog carnival on the flaws of passive investing. You know, you could call it new investing ideas, something like that. Or rational investing blog carnival. And you know, simple suggestion, perfectly appropriate for a blog forum. You know, so this is blog owners get together and discuss strategies. And, it's, you know, this guy comes in with this nasty stuff, and he's joking about the death threats. He thinks it's funny. You know, I mean, I can joke about it. Somebody threatens to kill my wife and children, but I don't think other people should be joking about it. And, you know, so I respond and I just say, look, you know, I don't want people here to feel intimidated if they agree that passive investing is a bad idea. And if you engage in these personal attacks, it's going to make people feel not welcome. It's going to make people feel they shouldn't post it. It went back and forth a little bit. And finally, you know, one of the owners sends me an email. He says, Rob, he says, look, I actually agree with a lot of your investing ideas. I think, you know, what you're saying makes sense, but I've learned that when people tune me out, and people have tuned you out, when people tune me out, just don't say anymore, you know. And if you keep responding to their questions, you're going to be banned. And I'm like, what the heck does that mean? I'm not supposed to answer their questions. How are they ever going to learn if I don't answer their questions? You know, it's sort of similar. It's sort of like they've lost the steam. They don't feel anymore that they can defend the passive model, but it's sort of like, you know, don't hit a man wearing glasses. You know, passive investors are sort of sad people, and please don't hit us anymore. You know, because we don't really have any arguments. You know, but we want to believe this. So please leave us alone. Leave us alone. Even Drip Guy sort of said that. He's one of the lead goons over at the Goon Central, and he was saying the other day, oh, Rob, you know, don't we have a right to just be left alone? And I'm like, well, yeah, you do. You don't have to read anything on any board if you don't want to read it. But there's other people in the community who want to read it. You don't have a right to decide for them. You have a right to tune out yourself, of course. But you don't have a right to decide for others. So this tone is developing. Now, what the guy was saying to me at the Money Blog Network, he was saying, look, just leave them alone, you know. Leave them alone. And I don't buy that. And for a couple reasons, but one is if every time the passive investing dogmatists get upset, the rational investors get quiet, how are the millions of middle-class investors ever going to learn the realities of stock investing if we don't tell them? In other words, there are a lot of people out there who want to know this stuff. How are they ever going to learn it if we don't ever contribute? If we're always just afraid or you know, feel sad for the passive investors, you know? I feel sad that they're passive investors. I want to help them. I want them to learn. If they don't want to learn, I totally respect their right to just go on with what they're doing. I mean, that goes without saying. But I'm not going to treat them like charity, you know, like, I don't know, cripples. I mean, this is pathetic. It's just amazing that we're even discussing such things. If their strategies are good, they're not going to get their feelings hurt by the fact that Rob Bennett reports what the historical data says. If their strategies are so lame that it makes their tummies hurt to hear what the historical data says, well, they need new strategies. They need to change, and nobody's helping them by pretending otherwise. So I think this is so wrong. And so one of the things that I think rationals, all the people who understand that passive cannot work in the real world, we all have to get about the business of speaking up more clearly, not feeling sad for passives, showing them the respect and affection that they merit, and, you know, giving them a good argument. Now, we should always be polite, absolutely. We should always show them respect and affection, absolutely. No question whatsoever. Never, ever, ever should we be rude or discourteous or abusive or anything like that. But we have to be firm, and we have to be honest, and we have to be clear. So one of the things that came up on the Money Blog Network discussion was there was a thread there where people were sort of taking shots. Some of the people who advocate passive investing were taking shots at me and at my, you know, ideas, the rational investing ideas, valuation-informed indexing. And it just kills me, the things that people say. Because, of course, to some of them, it may be new. It may be the first time they've tried this. But I've been doing this for so long, and I've heard, I know the weak points of valuation-informed indexing. There's no strategy that's without weak points. I know what they are. I've done a podcast on them. But when people just send these, I know that these people want to make me look bad. You know, you can tell. They want to, you know, see me strike out. But they're throwing softballs, you know, right down the middle of the plate. And I'm like, man, is that the best you can do? Without trying to ridicule them or mock them, I have to make that observation. So this guy, I forget who it was, but he said, Rob, you know, how about from 90, you know, you've described valuation-informed indexing. Valuation-informed indexing, for those who don't know, is it's an approach to indexing where you change your stock allocation based on big changes in price. So when prices are at moderate levels, you'd have one allocation, say 60%. When prices are at insanely dangerous high levels, you might drop your allocation to 30%. And when prices are at mouth-wateringly good low levels, you would increase your allocation to 90%. So you don't have one allocation. You have three. You know, there's different variations. You could have five if you wanted, or you could have just two. You know, you could do it all kinds of ways. But basically, you're not going to stick with the same allocation because risk changes based on the price of stock, so it makes no sense to be at the same stock allocation at all times. So he said, Rob, and basically, you know, if you follow this, what would happen is you would have been at a high, passives and rationals both would have been at a high stock allocation from 1975 through January of 1996, because stocks were priced to provide a strong long-term value proposition for that entire time period, 21 years. From 96 through September of 2008, valuation-informed indexers, rational investors, would have been at a low stock allocation because the price went to insanely dangerous levels, the price of stocks, by January of 96. It, of course, had been going up for a long time. In 75, it was very, very low, mouth-wateringly low, and it continued going up for that 21-year time period. By January of 96, prices were at the insanely dangerous level, And, you know, any rational investor would have known to lower his stock allocation. Of course, if he knew. I mean, the stock selling industry wasn't telling us this, but if you had done your own research, if you had checked the historical data, as I did, only because I was planning an early retirement, not because I'm so smart, but I had no choice. I had to check it on my own, and when I checked it, I found that the conventional advice is bonkers. So, 96, you would have lowered your allocation. We didn't go back to fair value, to reasonable prices, until September of 2008, the stock crash. So from that time forward, the passives and the rationals are sort of back in sync. We both say that stocks today, at today's prices, offer a strong long-term value proposition. Now, valuation-informed indexing always does better on a risk-adjusted basis in the long term, always, throughout the entire historical record. The reason is because whatever stock allocation you set for yourself, you're trying to take risk into account. And since the risk is changing, you obviously are doing the wrong thing if you fail to make an adjustment for price. So obviously, investing rationally, just which all that means is taking price into consideration, it has to pay off in the long term. What happens is that it's sometimes rash. Sometimes valuation-informed indexing will go ahead in 1 year or 2 years. Sometimes it takes longer. But sooner or later, it will always go ahead of passive indexing. And once it goes ahead, the edge that the rational investor has grows over time because of the magic of compounding returns. So even if it takes you 5 years or 10 years to go ahead of the passives, once you go ahead, it might be it might be by a moderate amount, not a huge amount, but then you're going to get compounding returns for another 20 years. And at the end of a 30-year time period, the valuation-informed indexer sometimes has a portfolio double the size of the conventional indexer. So this fellow, you know, put up a question. He says, well, Rob, this doesn't, your approach doesn't make any sense. Rob, do you understand from 96 through 99, that 4-year time period, stocks skyrocketed? He says, Rob, you missed out. What are you, an idiot? And you almost don't know what to say, I swear, because the guy, on the one hand, he's hostile to me, so, you know, you want to be able to respond effectively, you know, when somebody's being hostile. On the other hand, you feel sorry for him because, the guy's hostile, but he's also sincere. At the same time, it's a weird mix. He's hostile as all get out. He doesn't want to give me a fair chance. He doesn't want to engage in fair debate. But you really get the feeling he believes in this, and he's invested his own money according to it, and he's in great pain. So you do sort of feel sorry. So the guy is, if it wasn't for the fact that he was hurting, you know, not he personally, but the passive model in general is hurting millions of middle-class investors, you know, I would do what that guy advised me. I'd say, hey, you know, fine, buddy, you know, do what you want, and I'd just drop out. But how are we ever going to get the word out to millions of middle-class investors who want to know the realities if we don't somehow get past this, you know, this gang of thugs that won't let anybody talk in a civil and reasoned way? But anyway, he does believe it. That's the thing that always kills me. These people, they're angry and they're hostile, but yet they're following it. You can tell that they are. I mean, I follow this pretty closely, and they are following it. They're not always sincere in their comments, but they are sincere in believing in passive investing. I mean, they're not sincere when they, you know, say I harass women or whatever idiotic, you know, thing they're saying today to, you know, try to cause trouble on a discussion board, but they're sincere about believing in passive investing. So the guy says, you know, the purpose of this podcast is to respond to his argument because it's not a sophisticated argument. It's an easy argument to knock down, but it's an argument I've heard so many times. I mean, I have heard this hundreds of times. So you're going to have a hard time telling me that it's not a big deal in people's minds, so it has to be addressed. He was saying, Rob, from, you know, 96, I mean, it's just killing him. He's saying, I can show the numbers. You know, I've got calculators on my website. I can show valuation-informed indexing beats passive indexing 9 out of 10 times. You know, I've got a calculator, the Scenario Surfer. Check it out yourself. Uses the historical data to show this works 90% of the time. And anything that works 90%, in 90% of scenarios, you know, it's 90% of return sequences that come up. If it works in 9 out of 10, you've got to say, passive is a high-risk bet. I mean, can anyone make an argument for putting your retirement money on a strategy that's only going to pay off 1 out of 10 times? So what I say is valuation-informed indexing beats passive indexing. On a risk-adjusted basis, it always beats it. Because while there is this 1 out of 10 scenario, this quirky scenario where passive can end up ahead, the risk there is so high that on a risk-adjusted basis, valuation-informed indexing is better. So I can show numbers. But it doesn't matter. I'm not arguing, you know, there is no logic to passive investing. What you're up against is not logic. You're up against emotion. And this guy, the emotion was just flooding out in his words. He was like, Rob, you're insane, you know, you're going to give up these returns from, 96, 97, 98, 99, you're going to give that up? Stocks were going up 20, 30% a year. Well, the answer is yes, I'm going to give them up by intent. That's not a mark against valuation-informed indexing that I gave up these returns. I want to give up those returns. So, the way of saying it, I want to be as direct as I can to people. I don't want anyone to be fooled into thinking, there aren't times when the valuation-informed indexer will be down, because we will be down as a matter of intent. That's the whole strategy. So that's why I have this somewhat joking title to this podcast, I Can Teach You How to Lose Money in a Bull Market, because that's what we're talking about, isn't it? He's saying, we were in this massive bull market in the late 90s, most insane bull market we've ever seen. And he's saying, Rob, you're down in those years. When the market was totally bonkers, insane, you're down, you're losing money. You were in tips and I-bonds paying 3.5 real. You could have been in stocks earning 20, 30%, man. Don't you feel bad? The answer's no. I don't feel bad. The market was nuts. Why would I want to be involved in it? Is that so hard to understand? That a person wouldn't want to put their retirement money in something that was nutso? Why would I want to be involved in such a situation? Now, that I said in my response to him, I said, look, I've heard stories about middle-class people who have made millions buying lottery tickets. Should I feel bad that I don't buy lottery tickets with my retirement money? I mean, if you're going to buy a lottery ticket for fun, fine. Have some fun. If you want to take 10% of your money and invest it passively, fine. Have a blast. But we're talking about putting most of your retirement money into a vehicle that from 96 through 2008, the stock price was insane. At the high part of the bull, it was 3 times fair value. That meant for every dollar of stocks you bought, you were getting 35 cents of stocks and 65 cents of nothingness. And you're telling me to put all my retirement money there? And you don't... The killer, it's not that he thinks it. Obviously, millions of people did this. The killer is, even after I explain, even after I show the numbers, he still thinks it. And I think he's sincere. For all his hostility, I think he invests his own money this way. I think he is sincere. I mean, that's the test. If you invest your own money that way, you are sincere. You might be angry, you might be defensive, but you're sincere in saying that you think it's the right thing to do if you're doing it yourself. In other words, there's deception involved. When people try to ban honest posting, they're clearly engaged in deception. But the deception starts with themselves. They deceive themselves, and then they deceive others. That's the thing about all this that is so strange. It's the greatest act of deception in the history of the United States. The greatest act of financial fraud. is the promotion of passive investing over the past 30 years. But it's not fraud where people were trying to hurt other people. It's fraud where they were trying to hurt themselves. And then, you know, by extension, they hurt millions of middle-class investors as well. Boy. That takes the cake. But so what I thought I should do is because this question is so basic, it comes up over and over and over again. I feel like it really is core to everything. I should just have a podcast where I try to hit it from different angles and see if I can somehow connect with people in explaining why you would not want to be invested in the market when prices are insane, even if it turns out that there were a couple years when, you know, you quote-unquote missed out by not being in it. I don't want to participate in such a thing. Now, one way to look at it is to look at those years. I quoted the number of years when passive and rational did well, and what I said was rational and passive. See, the passives, what they do is they claim credit for the entire bull market. They say, hey, if you invested passively, you're up because you were in stocks, you know, from 75 forward. Well, it's not right for passive investing to take credit for 1975 through 1996 because those years, rationals also were going with high stock allocations. Stocks just offered a good value proposition. So you can't claim credit for that. It wasn't passive investing that gave you those gains. It was just the stock market. It's a good deal. That's all. And the passives obviously can't claim credit for 2000 through 2008 because it was a disaster. Passive lost money all through those 9 years. Lots of it in the last one, but it was losing money for 8 years before the crash. So the only slice of time for which passives can claim a positive record is 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, 4 years. Now, I give them that. I mean, it's just a stone-cold fact. Stocks were returning 20, 30%. Rationals were in, you know, some asset class giving 3, 4% real. You know, whether it was TIPS, I-bonds, CDs, whatever it was. So, you know, passives beat us. You know, it's the way it is. But the point is, that's not a mistake. It's not like we should apologize for that. Who's ahead in the end? The passives get to keep the money from 96 to 99. The rationals get to avoid the stock crash. Who's ahead? Rationals are ahead if you do the math. And if you do the math and you take the amount they're ahead by today and then you count the compounding returns for 20 more years, the rationals are far ahead. It's not close. And of course, if you go, you don't have to, I'm not just talking about the modern era, you go back through the entire historical record and they're ahead. So what is the argument for passive? What is the argument? If you're always ahead with rational, what is the argument? And on average, valuation-informed indexers can retire 5 years sooner. What is the argument? There is no argument, but there is an emotion. People feel like they look at it and they say, I can't imagine giving up those. That's what's going on. They're looking at those returns and they're saying 20, 30% a year for 4 years. I can't imagine giving that up. I can't do it. Can't do it. Now, what the argument? You know, I've often said that the quote-unquote experts, I claim there are no experts. In a world in which passive investing is as popular as it is, there's no such thing as an investing expert. But I have chastised the experts because the historical data showing, that the academic research showing that passive cannot work dates back to 1981. And so I just think it's a scandal that people have been promoting passive all these years when the academic research has shown that valuations affect long-term returns. If valuations affect long-term returns, it obviously doesn't make sense to stay at the same stock allocation when valuations change dramatically. But there's one argument that the experts sometimes bring up, and they usually bring it up somewhat apologetically, but it does make a little bit of sense. And so, you know, to be fair, I want to point this out. And the argument is, they'll say, well, look, a lot of our clients are very emotional, very emotional. And we don't have any choice. You know, the suggestion is, if we were to tell them to get out of stocks in 1996, and then prices went up 20-30% a year for 4 years, they would fire us. None of us would have jobs. So we have no choice. We have to give them bad advice. They're so emotional. There's no other way. We couldn't stay in business. Now, I claim this is false. I do acknowledge that stock investors are intensely emotional today. Because no one has greater experience with that than Rob Bennett. I've seen it. Close up and personal. You know, for 7 years running. So the statement is true. But the question is, are they emotional because they're incapable of human reason? Or are they emotional because you've been promoting passive investing for 30 years? Passive investing is pure emotion. There's no argument for it. The price affects, you know, your long-term return. You know, that's a revelation. That's a surprise. Price affects the value proposition of anything you buy. So why would anyone think it would be different with stocks? Passive investing makes no sense. The reason why they're emotional is because they are investing passively. They believe that you don't need to time the market. They believe it's okay to stay at the same stock allocation. Because they've heard it 10 kajillion times. And once you start believing in something so totally irrational, you do become emotional because you've got your retirement money tied up in it, of course. So what I say is, we've essentially got two things working against us. One, human nature works against us when it comes to stock investing. You know, human nature works against us in a lot of areas. You know, we're weak. Human nature works against us when it comes to our diets. A lot of us would like to eat 10 pieces of chocolate cake every day, and that's not a good idea. But at least when it comes to our diets, the experts tell us, you know, try to limit the chocolate cake, you know, try to eat fruits and vegetables and protein and you know, maybe a piece of chocolate cake every now and then isn't going to kill you, but, you know, not 10 pieces a day, please. But the experts in investing say, go for it, man. 70% stock allocation when the PE10 level's 30? Hey, fine. Studies say it's okay. You know, they're telling us to destroy ourselves. So we've got human nature working against us, and we've got the stock selling industry working against us. The experts are pretty much the stock selling industry. That's who the experts are. The people they call experts are people who make money selling stocks. So it's hardly a surprise that they're not giving us, you know, 100% straight story. And I want to change that. I want to open up the internet to honest posting on the realities of investing so that middle-class investors have a way to learn the realities. And I think if enough of us learn the realities and go to the experts and ask that they start reporting the realities too, I think a lot of the experts would love to tell us the realities. That is my sense, my strong sense. So I'm hoping to turn this around. I'm hoping to get to a situation where, you know, the television and the radio and the magazines and the internet are all telling you the dangers of passive investing, not encouraging you to go with a 100% emotional approach, encouraging you to resist the lure of investing emotionally, encouraging you to take valuations into account when setting your allocation. And so I want to be as upfront as I possibly can. I don't want to be apologizing, you know, like this guy was suggesting at the board. Oh, just, you know, when you find they're tuning you out, just be quiet. No, I want to state, I think we all need to start stating the realities plainly, clearly, firmly. Plainly, clearly, firmly. No apologies. No one reporting the realities of stock investing should apologize for doing so, ever. The people who report, the people who get the retirement numbers wrong, they don't apologize. Well, the people who get them right have to stop apologizing. This is a big deal. The big problem here is this social taboo, this idea that if you report the realities, you're somehow bad. You're somehow mean. No. The mean thing is to tell people baloney that causes them to delay their retirement by 5 or 10 years. That's mean. Telling the realities is not mean. So that's got to change. That's a social change. And we need community action. It can't be one person. It needs to be the entire community. So I want to be as direct as I can be, and saying I can teach you how to lose money in a bull market is as direct as you can be. It hits the emotional hot buttons. Just, you know, I want to hit you over the head with it. That yes, I am going to teach you how to lose money in a bull market. Because the guy was right, you would have been down for those 4 years. So rational investing, valuation informed indexing is telling you how to lose money in a bull market. Why would you want to do that? It's a change in how you think about investing. Why would you want to lose money in a bull market? Why the heck would you want that? Because bull markets are irrational. That's why passive investing works in bull markets. The reason why passive investing gives better results than rational for 4 years is that passive is a 100% emotional strategy. And the market was 100% bonkers emotional from 96 through 99. So when the market's irrational, the rationals are going to walk away from the table. And yeah, if it stays irrational, we're going to lose out by design. We want to lose out. We don't want anything to do with it. We're not gamblers. Gambling is investing, no matter how irrational stocks are, and hoping it'll work out. Investing is getting the probabilities on your side. Rational investing is probability investing. When the stock market gets to the price levels that applied from 1996 through 2008, the probabilities are against the stock investor. That's why we walk away from the table. We love stocks as a general proposition because, as a general proposition, the probabilities of stock investing favor the investor. But when we get into one of those time periods where the probabilities are against us, we don't want all our retirement money riding on that bet. Now, I went through an exercise here, a sort of mental exercise, and I did this in 5 minutes. I didn't take time to get it all statistically accurate. The purpose here is just to make a point. I mean, one of the questions is, do casinos... If you think it's strange for me to say I can teach you how to lose money in a bull market, do casinos ever lose money? They do, don't they? Casinos lose money. Casinos, you know, if you wanted to look at things in a totally rationalizing perspective, you might say, casinos should set up slot machines to never pay off. They'd make more money. In other words, people would keep pouring dollars in, and the casinos would never pay out. They'd get rich faster. But it doesn't work that way, does it? Casinos have found out the way that they get rich in the long term is by sometimes providing big payouts. How do lotteries attract money? They have these huge payoffs, these $20 million payouts. Why do they do that? Because when people hear about a $20 million payout, they start playing the lottery more. Payouts are what make it all work. If there were no payouts, people wouldn't fall for this junk. In other words, if the casino adopted a policy of we're not going to have any more payoffs, in about 2 weeks, nobody would go to the casino anymore. So yeah, they'd make a few dollars in the short term. But in the long term, they would be losers. So they pay out all the time. They love payouts. What they like is having enough payouts to get the gamblers to put money on the table, but to have the probabilities on their side enough that they know they're going to win in the long run. Well, what you want to do as an investor is you want to play the game like you're the casino, not like you're the sap at the slot machine. Again, if you're doing it for fun, you're not a sap. You know, if you set a limit, you're not a sap. You're just having a good time. But if you're putting your retirement money this way, you're a sap. You're a fool. And that's what passive investors do in bull markets. They ignore the odds. They cover their eyes. They say, I don't want to know. There's literally a guy at the Vanguard Diehards. Can't remember his name right at the moment, but it'll come to me. But he used to brag about it. He used to say, I'm a know-nothing investor. That's what passive investors are. They say, Rob, don't tell us what the probabilities are. Don't tell us what the historical data says. We don't want to know. We'll ban you. You know, we'll tape up your mouth because you're telling us that the four times stocks have been at these price levels, the average price drop is 68%. We don't want to hear that, Rob. We're trying to persuade ourselves to put all our retirement money in. We don't want to hear these odds. That makes us feel bad. Yes, there are payoffs. Of course there are payoffs. But the payoffs are not helping you. The payoffs are hurting you. Because the probabilities are that if you stay at the table, one of those years, the black card's going to come up and you're going to suffer the stock crash and those payoffs aren't going to amount to much. So, you know, I just went through and I just roughly, you know, put down some, just pretend you have a dice. Pretend the stock market is throwing dice. There's six sides to the dice. And you could have, you know, there's four possibilities on your stock return. You could have a great return. This is one of those years when you have a 20%, 30% gain. Let's call that a great return. You can have a good return. Anything above 6.5% real is good. That's a good return. You can have a fair return. That's where you beat a money market. You know, nothing to write home about, but you get a 3% return or 4%, and that's enough to beat a money market. It's a nice, solid return. Or you can have a bad return, and that's where you lose 50% of your money in a wipeout. So those are the four possibilities, and you've got a six-sided dice. At low valuations, PE10 levels below 12, the dice, you know, and again, this is very rough, but the dice might have, you know, one and two are great returns, the returns where you get 20, 30% in a year. So you got a one and three shot. Two of the sides of the dice are great returns. Three of the sides of the dice are good returns, returns of about 6.5 real or maybe a little more, maybe 10% real, something like that. Nice, good returns. That's three sides of the dice, so it's got a one and two chance of coming up. And one side of the dice, the worst possibility, it's only got a 1 in 6 chance. That's a fair return. That's something that beats a money market. You know, 2% real, 3% real, 4% real. Beats a money market, but not great. That, you know, in other words, when you're investing in stocks, at times when the P10 level is below 12, you might get one of those great returns. You've got a real solid chance of getting a good return. And in the worst case, you're going to probably be in a money market, or at least equal it. So why wouldn't you want to be heavily in stocks? There's no bad outcomes. Now, let's look at a moderate price dice. This is when stocks are priced, say, P10 level 12 up to about P10 level 19 or 20. Again, you've got two of the six sides are great returns. These returns of, you know, 15, 20, 25%. Obviously, you like those. You've got two of the six sides are good returns. Returns of 6.5 or a little more, maybe 8. You know, obviously, you want to be in those. You've got one of the six sides is fair. That's where you just barely beat the money market. You know, maybe you get 3% real. Maybe you get 4% real. Below the average return, but not horrible. You know, you don't really want one of those to come up, but you can. That's not going to kill you, you know, given those great possibilities. And you've got one out of six that's bad. One out of six where you suffer a big loss at moderate prices. So the strategic question is, am I willing to risk that one out of six coming up? There is a chance of a big loss when you invest in stocks at moderate prices. But it's only something like one out of six. And you've got these great possibilities and these good possibilities and these fair possibilities. Stocks are still a good, the way I always say it is they offer a strong long-term value proposition. You might get a bad short-term result or a fair short-term result, but if you keep rolling the dice, you're not going to get six bads in a row. There's only one side of the dice that's really bad. Two sides of the dice that are either fair or bad. So you've got a 1 in 3 shot of a fair or bad outcome. But if you roll it 6 times, you're going to get mostly good and great results. So again, at moderate prices, stocks offer an outstanding long-term value proposition. Now, at high valuations, like the valuations that applied from 96 through 2008, you've still got that. You still got one side of the dice that's a great return. That's what that poster was pointing me to. He was saying, hey, Rob, don't tell me I can't get a 20, 30% return when stocks are at insanely high prices. I did. I was invested heavily in stocks, and I got a great return, 96, 97, 99. It's true. It's rare. Never before in history have we been at those prices and had great returns 4 years in a row. That's never happened before. But it did happen, and it could happen again at those prices. You can't rule it out. It's possible. You know, sometimes you're rolling a dice, and you roll a 6 4 times in a row. I've been playing Risk with my boys, and sometimes it happens. You know, I mean, I think I had one. My boy got upset. He had the game is complicated. Sometimes one person has 3 dice and the other one only has 1, and he had 3 dice and but the defender wins. If it's a tie, the defender wins, and he was attacking me and he rolls 3 sixes, saying, how can I lose 3 sixes? I pick up the dice, I only have 1 dice, so he felt he had an edge on me, because if he got any sixes, he would beat me. He's only got to get 1 6 to beat me. He gets 3. I roll the dice, I only have 1 dice, 1 chance to beat him. I roll a 6. The defender wins in a tie, so my 1-6 beats all 3 of his. And, you know, he got upset. He says, you got remote control. You got some, you know, you're controlling that dice. You know, you're cheating. But it happens. Well, that's what happened in 96 through 99. The passive investors rolled 4 sixes in a row. They were taking a long shot bet, and the long shot bet came through 4 times in a row. It did happen. They didn't get any more, did they? 2000, they didn't roll a 6. 2001, they didn't roll a 6. 2002, they didn't roll a 6. 2003, they didn't roll a 6. 2004, they didn't roll a 6. 2005, they didn't roll a 6. 2006, they didn't roll a 6. 2007, they didn't roll a 6. 2008, they didn't roll a 6. 2009, they didn't roll a 6. So this guy's telling me, Rob, you should base all your investing strategies on the fact that I rolled 4 sixes in a row. And I'm like, no, man. I don't care that you rolled 4 sixes in a row. I want to know the odds. And if only one side of the dice is a 6, I'm not interested in that bet. So at high valuations, we could say one side of the 6 is a great return, 20 to 30%. One side's good. So there were some goods that came up. From 2000 to 2009, I don't remember the years, but there were a couple good years in there where they got 6.5 real or maybe a little more, maybe 8% real. Goods are going to come up. One side of the 6 is great. One side is good. 2 fairs. Fair is where you beat a money market, but just barely. So maybe the money markets were returning 2% real, 3% real, and stocks were getting 3% real, maybe 3.5% real. So you've got those goods. You've got fairs. You got those 2 fairs. So overall, you got a great, a good, and 2 fairs. You've actually got 4 out of the 6 sides are, you know, not awful. But you've got 2 bads. And a bad is a loss of up to 50%. Sooner or later, you're going to roll one of those bads. And that's what happened in 2008. Now, when you roll the bad, you know, you could lose 10 years of returns. If you lose 50% of your portfolio, do you know what you need to get back to zero? If you have $100,000 in stocks and you lose $50,000, 50% loss, what kind of return do you need to get back to $100,000? You need 100%. If you go from 100,000 down to 50, you need a return of 100% to get back up to 100. You've got to double your money. It's going to take years. Passive investors have you know, they've handicapped themselves for years by taking these wild bets. Now, I don't say it to make your tummy hurt. That's not my point. What I want, you know, what passive investors, you see, what's so frustrating to me is that I talked in the last podcast about how wonderful indexing is. You know, the last one was the intrinsic value of stocks is a secret we keep from ourselves, because with indexing, we now can know the intrinsic value of stocks. Please listen to that one if you haven't. I think it's an important podcast. It points out how wonderful indexing is. But because indexing has been tied with passive investing, we've given up all the benefits of indexing. Because we're using indexing, but we're doing it in this mindless way that causes us to take these wild bets that in the long term never work out. Once you know the intrinsic value of stocks, you should take advantage of that, which means when the intrinsic value of stocks is better than the intrinsic value of a safe asset class like TIPS or I-bonds, invest heavily in stocks. When the intrinsic value of TIPS or I-bonds is better than the intrinsic value of stocks, will invest heavily in TIPS or I-bonds. Lower your stock allocation. This is so basic that it's insulting. If I didn't know that there were millions of investors that have gone for this passive investing stuff, I wouldn't say this, because I feel that I was insulting my listeners. It needs to be said, because the stock selling industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars shoving this stuff down our throats for 30 years. And we've got to start organizing, and we've got to start insisting, not asking, for the right to post honestly on discussion boards on the internet and at blogs, so that we can start learning the realities of stock vesting. You know, the stock selling industry be darned. If they're not willing to tell us the realities, we're going to need to help each other out. Because we've got our retirement money riding on this. It's not a game. It's not a game. It's not a joke. We need to start learning the probabilities. I gave you a very rough, you know, for the purposes of this podcast, I just gave you a very rough sense of them. But if you want to really learn the probabilities, go to the calculators at the website. Because those are based on the historical data. Those are based on what we've always seen from stocks in the past. And, you know, all passive investing is based on historical data. When I point out the historical data, the answer I'll get is, how do you know stocks are going to perform in the future as they have in the past? I don't. But what I know is that the whole passive model is based on that premise. The way that passive was sold to us is through reference to the historical data. The difference is the passive numbers are all analytically invalid because they don't count the effective valuations. The rational model counts valuations. It takes into consideration the fact that stocks are not one asset class. They're three different asset classes depending on the price level. Stocks do not perform the same from sky-high price levels as they do when they're priced moderately or as they do when they're priced low. So you have to take that factor into consideration, that you're not just handed a dice. The dice change based on the valuation level. That's all that the change from passive to rational involves. It's just acknowledging that the price has an effect, that the PE10 level that applies when you buy the stocks changes the dice. And you need to know what kind of dice you're throwing before you put your money down on the table. The probabilities change with changes in valuation. And you need to know that. And if you choose to invest passively, even though you know it, well, God bless you. But you need to know it. That I'm sure. And so it's true that what the rational model is telling you is, you know, I can teach you how to lose money in a bull market. If you think that's a bad thing, if you think it's a bad thing to ever be down on the quote-unquote market, if you think it's a bad thing to ever underperform the market, then rational investing is not for you. Because it's almost guaranteed, well, it's virtually guaranteed that if you invest according to rational principles, there's going to come a time when you're going to hunt to get good long-term returns. If you want it, you can get it. But if you're emotionally upset by hearing the realities, there's really nothing I can do. There's nothing the historical data can do for you. It's an inside job getting to the point where you can accept that emotion can hurt you. That's something, you know, nobody can, there are no words I can say that will change that. But what bothers me is we have this wonderful approach to investing. The rational model is the model I'm talking about, but the rational model incorporates many of the principles of passive investing. It just doesn't, the only thing it doesn't incorporate is the passive part. That's the part that ruins it all. But some of the ideas of John Bogle are some of the best ideas of in investing history. So all of those are adopted incorporated into the rational model, but we just don't adapt the passive part because that's the suicide part. That's financial suicide. That's irrational. That's emotional. And I think one of the reasons originally the reason it was adopted is that the people who developed passive really believed in it, and they just didn't know. You know, the passive was developed in the 70s. And the research showing that valuations affect long-term returns didn't really come along until the 80s. So they didn't know. But I think what happened is as the research came in and as we learned how stock investing really works in the real world, we were in a bull market and people were attributing to passive the fact that stocks were performing well. And that had nothing to do with passive. That was just that stocks are a great asset class. And by the time we got to the point where stocks no longer were a great asset class, people weren't willing to listen to reason. They weren't willing to listen to what the academic research of 30 years shows. They just didn't want to hear it. And so the stock selling industry said, you know, I'm not going to tell them. And I think a lot of the people in the stock selling industry don't fully get it. I think they know there are problems. How could they not? They follow the literature, so they know. But they don't want to know. Just like the guy who asked me the questions on the discussion board, they don't want to know. They know there are problems, but they don't want to know how bad they are. So they tune it out, and as a result, they really don't know. And the change we need to make today is we need to want to know. If we want to know, we can turn this around. We can save this economy from going over a cliff. But the motivation I cannot supply. So the reason I choose a blunt podcast title, I can teach you how to lose money in a bull market, is that that's really what it's all about. If you can accept being down in a bull market, being, you know, underperforming the market for several years in a crazy irrational bull market, you can retire 5 years sooner. But that is the price of admission. That's what all rational investing about. It's about pounding that message home over and over and over again. So that when the time comes when you are tempted to abandon rationality in order to get those short-term results, you won't do it. Because the message will have been drilled into your head and you'll be familiar with the historical data and you'll know how to work the calculators and you won't be tempted. But that's what it's all about. That's what I think investing advice should be all about, training people to never, ever, ever, ever give in to the urge to invest passively, to fight it every day. And if you fight it every day, when the temptation comes, you won't give in. And yes, you will be down for 4 years or whatever length of time it is. But in the long term, you'll be up by enough to retire 5 years sooner than otherwise would have been possible for you. That's the pitch. That's the story. What happened with passive is we made a leap. Let's call it the indexing revolution. We made a leap. We didn't know how stock investing worked. People were trying to time the market in the short term, and that doesn't work. We made a leap. We learned that short-term timing doesn't work, but we made a mistake. And we said all timing doesn't work. We didn't. The truth is, short-term timing never works. Long-term timing always works. And we didn't know that part. So we got it half right, half wrong. And what we did was we took this wonderful breakthrough approach and turned it into a loser by making it a short-term strategy. It's marketed as long-term, but if all you're worried about is being down for 4 years, you're not a long-term investor. You're a short-term investor. When you'll know that you've become a truly long-term investor when the podcast title, I Can Teach You How to Lose Money in a Bull Market, makes sense to you. When you hear that title and you say, yeah, that's what I want. I want to underperform the market in a bull market. Because when I do, I know I've become rational. Because why wouldn't I want to underperform the market in a bull market? A bull market is insane. When prices go up 20, 30% a year, they're not coming from the earnings of the companies. It's being borrowed from the future. It's irrational. And somebody investing their retirement money doesn't want to invest irrationally. So you don't want those bull market gains. You should learn to despise them. When you truly despise them, the way is open for some wonderful things to happen in the future for you. Because from that point forward, you're going to beat 90% of investors and even 90% of investing quote-unquote experts. Anyone who advocates passive investing is not an expert. In Rob Bennett's opinion, I mean no insult to all the wonderful people who have advocated passive investing because we've learned from them. Rational investing would be impossible without the insights developed by the people who have advocated passive. But for so long as they advocate passive, I will continue to say they're not experts. Because passive, not changing your stock allocation in response to big price changes, I say is insane. It's irrational. So I'm going to teach you, if you listen to me long enough, I'm going to teach you how to lose money in a bull market and be glad to do so. That's when you'll be free of all the emotional craziness. That's when you'll be free to achieve financial freedom a lot sooner, to invest rationally. Good luck with your investing strategies.